Now, comedians know that timing is everything when it comes to pacing a joke or, and delivering the punchline, yeah? For all of us, though, what do we know about the importance of timing in everyday life? When's the right time, for example, to quit your job? Is that dip in mood that you've been feeling really a midlife crisis? And what kind of work should you save for doing in the afternoons? Daniel Pink has been exploring what the research says about beginnings, middles and ends. He's the author of When, The Scientific Secrets of Perfect Timing. And he joins us now from San Francisco on Skype. Now, Daniel, we tend to think a lot about why things happen and how things happen, but in your view, not so much about the when?
That's right, Amanda. We actually, in our lives, we're very intentional about what we do. So most of your listeners who are working probably have a to-do list. We're very intentional about who we do things with and how we do them. But when it comes to deciding when we do things, we're a little cavalier, and that's a mistake. There's a rich, rich body of science that tells us that that timing is much more of a science than an art, and we can use this evidence to make systematically better, smarter, shrewder decisions in our lives about when to do things.
Well, let's talk about our daily rhythms, first of all. There are people who are morning people. There are people who are night owls. Probably, you know, a fair few of us somewhere in between. How does this influence your daily rhythms and decision-making processes?
It has a big influence. Here's what we know about. There's a whole field called chronobiology, chrono for time, biology for the study of life. And every individual has what's known as a chronotype. Basically, what's your natural state? Are you someone who rises early and falls asleep early? Are you someone who rises late and falls asleep late? Or as you say, Amanda, are you somewhere in between? And what we know is about 15% of the population are these larks, early people. 20% are owls, evening people. But most of us, about two-thirds of us, are in between. And that affects how we move through the day. Typically, there are three big stages of the day, a peak, a trough, and a recovery. A peak, a trough, and a recovery. Owls and people in the middle move through it in that order. Peak, trough, recovery. Basically, that's our in our mood and our certain kinds of performance. But owls go the other direction. They go recovery, trough, peak. And so once you know your chronotype, you can figure out what sort of work should you do at certain times of the day.
So what is that? What sort of work should you do at certain times of the day? If you're a lark.
Okay. So we should be doing, whether we're a lark or an owl, we should be doing our work that is doing our analytic work during our peak. And again, for most of us, that peak is the morning. For owls, it's later in the day. We should be doing our analytic work during the peak. And the reason for that is that during the peak, we are most vigilant. That's the concept of vigilance is key in this research. What this means is that during this peak period, we're better able to bat away distractions. We're better able to eliminate intruders into our, you know, into our cognitive castle. And that makes it the best time to do work that requires heads down, focus, energy, and intensity. Writing a report, analyzing data, going over a complicated strategy. So during the peak, we should be doing our analytic work. During the trough, we should be doing basically our administrative work because the trough, that early afternoon period, is not a good time for anything.
So that you mean stuff that you're doing without having to think too much?
Yeah, stuff that doesn't require a big cognitive load. Answering your routine email, filling out reports, all the sort of, you know, that kind of stuff that all of us have to do on the job. And that trough is a dangerous period. If you look at many, many things, corporate performance actually sinks during that period. You see some very alarming statistics on healthcare, where there's greater incidence of anesthesiology errors in that period. There's a greater incidence of nurses and physicians not washing their hands. Doctors more inclined to prescribe unnecessary antibiotics. You see really some very alarming data in children and how they perform on tests, do worse in that period rather than in the morning. So the trough, we should do our administrative work. During the recovery, it's actually a very interesting period because what happens, remember, with our mood is peak, trough, recovery. Later in the day, our mood goes back up. However, we're less vigilant than we are during the peak. And that combination is actually really interesting and powerful. If we're in an elevated mood and we're a little bit more disinhibited, we're a little bit looser, that makes it a very good time for creative work, work like brainstorming, iterating new ideas. And so the recipe is actually rather simple, that we should be doing our analytic work during our peak, you know, we should be doing our administrative work during the trough, and we should be doing our creative insight work during the recovery. And what the research shows is that time of day effects alone, just time of day, explains about 20% of the variance in how people perform on workplace tasks. So that doesn't mean timing is everything, but it means it's a very big thing.
But Daniel, given that when your peak, your trough, and your recovery occurs over a daily cycle, depends on whether you're a lark or an owl or somewhere in between.
Right.
I mean, you have to match up with other people. It's not just about you and your own, you know, cycle. You've
got to
work in with other people's daily cycles too.
That's absolutely right. And this actually can be a challenge for many organizations. So, for instance, if we think about scheduling. Right, the way that we schedule meetings in organizations, both here in the States and in Australia, is just absurd. The only criterion we use in scheduling meetings is availability. And so what we have to think about when we schedule meetings is, what kind of meeting is this? Who's going to be there? And so there could be some meetings where you want some people in their peak analytic phase and some people in their peak creative phase. You might want to have that mix of different cognitive styles in your particular meeting. It also depends on what you're trying to do with that meeting. If it's a meeting that requires heads down analytic focus, then what you want to do is you want to have people doing it during their peak time. Now, some people, as you say, Amanda, are not going to be in their peak time. And for that, actually, unfortunately, in many cases, the individual has to adjust. So there's some things that individuals can do to adjust to being in their non-optimal time.
Even so, Daniel, with you know, different people having perhaps different peaks, troughs, recoveries over the course of their day, is there such a thing as a sort of collective mood?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I mean, I think that I don't know any research on that in particular. I think it's possible. But here's the thing to remember, though. I mean, remember that, you know, most of us move. 80% of us move through the day in that order: peak in the morning, trough in the afternoon, recovery later in the day.
So the world is sort of better designed for those of us who would be in that than the night owls.
Right. The world is. This is. I you're absolutely right about that. The world, particularly the corporate world, is structured to the night owl's disadvantage, big time. And so, but what night owls can do for the 20% of us who are night owls is they can do some small things to make it a little bit better. For instance, let's give you an example of this. Let's say that you have somebody who's a night owl, and he has to have you schedule an eight, he has to be at an 8 o'clock meeting. Now, for night owls being at an 8 a.m. meeting is torture. So, but let's say it's unavoidable. What should that night owl do? Well, what he can do is maybe the night before, while he's in his peak period, think about, what do I want to accomplish in this meeting? What do I need to know about this meeting? What do I need to get done in this meeting or say in this meeting? And basically make himself a little checklist. Then maybe before the 8 o'clock meeting, take a walk around the block. There's incredible research about the restorative power of breaks. We also know that doing a good deed for somebody is a mood booster. So before he comes into this meeting, you know, maybe buy somebody a cup of coffee. And so we can do some things when the world doesn't match up to our chronotype. We can take some individual actions to mitigate some of the downsides.
It's all about timing right now here in Life Matters with Daniel Pink, who's on the phone from San Francisco, not on Skype. He's the author of a book called When, not How or Why, but When. Now, Daniel, it's not just the timing of daily life that you're interested in, but also over the stretch of time. And your own experience when you were younger matches a study that was done that mapped the income and careers of people, of men actually, who graduated from university in the 1980s and then tracked them over 20 years. Now, tell us about what that study found.
Yeah, this is pretty alarming, Amanda, and it shows you how important you know, when we think about timing, we can think about it over the course of a day. What's the pattern of the day? Why do breaks matter? But then if we also think about our lives, our lives are very episodic. They have beginnings, middles, they're series of episodes, and episodes have beginnings, middles, and ends. And so this is some research from Lisa Kahn at Yale University, and she found that imagine two graduates of a university, similar graduates. One, let's call her Maria. Maria graduates in a boom economy, and then Esther graduates in a recession. That is going to show up in people's wages. That's going to show up in their wages 20 years later. That Esther, 20 years later, will still be at a disadvantage because of that start, because of the beginning of her career was during a downdraft. And that's very alarming. If you look at graduates of business schools, people who graduate business schools during a recession are less likely to become CEO of a large company.
Now that, that's
nothing to do with their ability.
No, that's just about luck, Daniel. I mean, being lucky enough or unlucky enough about when you're entering the job market, whether the timing happens to be good or bad. That's not something you can control, is it? It's not anything you can do anything about.
No, but it's not something I don't think it's something that we should put the burden entirely on the shoulders of a single individual about. Now we recognize, and I think that the alarming factor of all of this is how long this lasts. Right. So the idea that someone who graduates in a down economy and someone who graduates in an up economy, they're going to have different experiences getting a job straight out of university. The idea that the person who graduated in a recession is still at a disadvantage 20 years later, I think is pretty alarming. And so there's nothing, this is not the kind of thing where, I'm an owl and I have to go to an 8 o'clock meeting, so let me just take a walk around the block. This doesn't require, there's no individual solution here. I actually think that there has to be, for these kinds of things, some kind of collective solution. So here in the United States, where students go to university and actually have to get incredible amounts of loans, maybe there should be something that says if the unemployment rate hits a certain level, that some student loans should be forgiven. Or maybe if the unemployment rate hits a certain level, there should be some kind of assistance to people to help them find that first job.
Interesting.
That is timing. These timing decisions, the effects of timing are not fully in our control, exactly as you say, and that creates a level of unfairness that I think we have a moral obligation in society to try to address.
All right. Well, now, in the Divine Comedy, Daniel, Dante's big work, the opening of it goes something like this. In the midway of this, our mortal lives, I found me in a wood, astray, gone from the path direct. For some reason, that has always stuck in my mind. I'm not someone who generally remembers the first line of books like that, but it stuck.
I'm very impressed that you're quoting Dante in real time.
Well,
that's
look,
impressive.
And what it is, it seems to be describing a midlife crisis. Is the midlife crisis really a thing, though? I mean, is there any valid science behind that term?
The midlife crisis is complete rubbish. There is no evidence of a midlife crisis. What we do see in an amazing amount of research, the volume of research here is incredible, is something a little softer, something a little quieter, which is a midlife dip. That is, during midlife, if you look at people's well-being, during their 20s and 30s, they generally report higher well-being. During the 40s, their well-being starts to dip a little bit. When they're in their 50s, it reaches its bottom point. And then in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, it climbs again. It's like a sloping letter U, not a deep U, but a sloping letter U. And I think what's interesting about that, this research has been done in something like 70 different countries. If I were to show you the chart for well-being over time, and if I were to show you two charts, say one of these, Amanda, is well-being over time in Australia. The other one is well-being over time in the United States. The third one. And the other one is well-being over time in the United Arab Emirates. You would not be able to tell the difference. They look remarkably similar. And so there's something about hitting the middle that causes us, in certain circumstances, to slump.
So, all right, it's not a crisis, but it is a thing, the midlife slump. Daniel Pink is the author of When, The Scientific Secrets of Perfect Timing. It pulls together stories and research about how timing influences your life in the day-to-day and in the longer term. And Daniel, now I think is the perfect time for our conversation to end. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Amanda, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Good to talk to you. And you're listening to Life Matters.